Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's 1 o'clock, so I think we'll make a start. I guess that you can all hear me properly. If at any time during the proceedings you can't hear me or one of the other contributors, just shout and we'll make sure you can. I'd like to welcome you here this afternoon to an exploratory meeting for the Paignton Neighbourhood Plan. An exploratory meeting is probably as new to me as it is to you, and I'm going to go on to explain a little bit about it in a couple of minutes. But first of all, I think we need to do some housekeeping, don't we? It hasn't been explained very clearly to me, but I believe that there are fire escapes. If you go out of the... Obviously, those two doors have fire escape written on them. If you turn right, you'll see a fire escape at the end of the corridor. And if you turn left, you come to the main stairs, which you probably came up. Please don't use the lift if there's a fire. We're not expecting any fire drills this afternoon, is my understanding. I don't know how hot this room is going to get, and I don't think there are any opening windows. We might be able to open the door if everyone does get really hot. So stick your hand up if it starts to become unbearable. There is also an issue with the Wi-Fi, so I'm going to make a plea to say that please don't use the Wi-Fi if you don't need it, because I do. I might need it. So I've managed to log into the system at the moment, but I think there is some issue with bandwidth. So if everybody's using the Wi-Fi at the same time, I might lose it. Turning to the actual proceedings today, I'm very happy for you to all call me Deborah, if you're happy that I should address you by your first names. Everyone happy with that? Okay. Before we start the main part of the meeting, I wanted to take the opportunity to explain a little bit more about the process of the examination of a neighbourhood plan. The Paignton Neighbourhood Development Plan has to be independently examined, and I'm the independent examiner who's been appointed, following a process set out in the Town and Country Planning Act 1990, as amended by the Localism Act 2011, and the subsequent Neighbourhood Planning General Regulations 2012. It is a bit of a tome I'm going to have to read through, but I thought it was the best way to be able to explain the process to you. As the examiner, I'm required to check that under paragraph 8.1 of the Schedule 4B of the Town and Country Planning Act 1990, as amended, I have to check whether the policies in the plan relate to the development and use of land for the designated neighbourhood area and are in line with the requirements of Section 38A of the Planning and Compulsory Purchase Act 2004. I have to check whether the plan meets the requirements of Section 38B of the Planning and Compulsory Purchase Act 2004, which specifies the period for which the plan is to take effect. I also have to check that the plan has been prepared for an area designated under the Localism Act 2011 and has been developed and is submitted for examination by a qualifying body. I am also required to determine whether the plan complies with the basic conditions, which are, and I'm only summarising them, that the proposed neighbourhood plan has regard to national policies and advice contained in guidance issued by the Secretary of State, contributes to the achievement of sustainable development and is in general conformity with the strategic policies contained within the development plan for the area. The plan must not breach and otherwise be compatible with EU obligations and human rights requirements. As an independent examiner, having examined the plan, I am required to make one of the following recommendations. One, that the plan can proceed unchanged to referendum. Two, that the plan with recommended modifications can proceed to a referendum. Or three, that the plan does not meet the legal requirements and cannot proceed to a referendum. I'm also required to recommend whether the referendum area should be different from the plan area and should the Paignton Neighbourhood Development Plan go to referendum. When I've issued my report, Torbay Council will consider it and decide whether they are satisfied with the recommendations. So ultimately, it rests with Torbay Council to decide whether they agree with my recommendations or not. The Council will publicise its decision on whether or not the plan will be submitted to a referendum, with or without modification. If the neighbourhood plan is submitted to a referendum, then 28 working days' notice will be given of the referendum procedure and the neighbourhood plan details. if the referendum, this is the bit you're probably all waiting for, if the referendum results in more than half of those voting, that is greater than 50%, voting in favour of the plan, then the district council must make the neighbourhood plan a part of the development plan as soon as possible. If approved by a referendum, then the made and then made by the local planning authority, the neighbourhood development plan then forms part of the development plan. This is the bit that is less sort of about the legal framework and more about how I have to look at actually examining the detail of the plan. So during my examination, I may identify issues of non-compliance with the basic conditions and other legal requirements. I will seek to resolve these through my recommending modifications. The scope of the modifications I can make is set out in legislation. It is likely in most cases that in order to recommend that the draft neighbourhood plan can proceed to a referendum, I will need to make modifications. I have never examined a plan which I haven't had to make modifications to in order to meet the basic requirements, and I've examined over 30 of them now. So it's not unusual to have to make modifications. I will recommend modifications to make the plan compliant with the basic conditions and other legal requirements and to correct errors. And those are the only modifications that I can make. Apart from, I can also make them so that there is greater clarity in the plan. But I am restricted in the changes that I can make to any plan. I may, on occasion, need to delete wording, including potentially an entire plan policy and or section of text. Where a policy does not meet the basic conditions or other legal requirement, although I will first fully consider modifying that policy rather than deleting it. Where a policy concerns a non-land use matter, advice in planning practice guidance states wider community aspirations than those relating to development and the use of land can be included in a neighbourhood plan, but actions dealing with non-land use matters should be clearly identifiable and, for example, set out in a companion document or annex. So if I find things in the plan that are more of a community aspiration rather than something that can be in a planning policy, then I will recommend that they're moved to a separate part of the plan. As such, when considering the deletion of any non-use land use matters from the plan, I will consider if I can make a modification to place the relevant proposed action in a non-statutory annex dealing with those wider community aspirations. I will not generally refer back to parties on these detailed revisions, but where the modification may necessitate a change which, in my opinion, would be of significance, there is a reasonable expectation that a description of any intended modification will be publicised by the local planning authority on its website and seeking comments prior to recommending the change. Significant changes may typically require further work to be undertaken, particularly in relation to a strategic environmental assessment. There will be circumstances where I may have to consider recommending that the plan cannot be reasonably modified to comply with the legal requirements and therefore should not proceed to referendum. The examination of a neighbourhood plan requires the assessment of whether or not the plan meets the basic conditions set out by the government. But these basic conditions are not the same as the tests set out for a local plan. There is no test for soundness of a neighbourhood plan. And I must confine my consideration of the plan primarily to whether or not the plan meets the basic conditions and other legal requirements. The examination of a neighbourhood plan is usually carried out by means of written representations. And until recently, the only exploration of issues available to an examiner in public would be to hold a hearing. You may be aware that there's a hearing to be held on the Torquay neighbourhood plan next Monday. Today's proceedings are not a hearing, but an exploratory meeting. This is a new process that's just been introduced in the guidance for examiners produced by NPEERS, who are the body who regulate independent examiners. Like a hearing, an exploratory meeting is called at the discretion of the examiner, so I can decide whether to hold it or not, with the examiner determining who should be invited to speak and which areas of the plan should be covered. Where it differs from a hearing is that the purpose of the meeting is to help the examiner establish whether or not there is a fundamental issue that may potentially jeopardise the success of the plan at examination. In contrast to a hearing, an exploratory meeting provides the flexibility for the examiner to convene a discussion with identified participants about the plan, where this may not fall necessarily within the very special statutory reasons for convening a hearing session. An exploratory meeting will provide an opportunity to consider an issue and scope where there is any viable remedy, exploring all the options. The exploratory meeting in the best case scenario may in itself provide the necessary clarification and lead to a resolution of the issue. Alternatively, it may reveal that nothing further can reasonably be done and that will prevent the plan failing the basic conditions or other legal requirements. In certain circumstances, it may be that further remedial work can be undertaken, subject to the examiner, the qualifying body and local planning authority agreeing that there is a reasonable prospect of remedying the plan's shortcomings by placing the examination on hold, that is, suspending the examination. And I may suggest a suspension if the issues that we're going to discuss today don't seem that they can reasonably be resolved during the meeting. Suspension is likely to be the most relevant to rectifying a procedural failing rather than a basic conditions compliance issue. However, even a procedural failing may be dealt with by withdrawing the plan and going back to the point of the plan's preparation, including consultation or submission to the local planning authority where the failure occurred. If the suspension relates to a policy's basic conditions compliance, I will be clear what the purpose of the suspension is, e.g., to gather more evidence, propose a different approach, etc. The length of the suspension is at my discretion. Following the suspension period, the aim is to be in a position to make the necessary modifications to the plan and recommend it proceeds to a referendum. However, there can be no guarantee of that. The reason that I've gone through in more detail is for you to understand the reason for having this meeting today and the process behind it. But it's also to inform you as a qualifying body and you as a community that in addition to the issues that I am looking to discuss today with you, and unrelated to the outcome of the meeting today, I have identified a number of issues regarding the formatting and wording of the plan and its policies that I consider will require modification in order to meet the basic conditions. To correct errors or provide clarification. Having read the plan and the supporting documents, I would like to congratulate the Neighbourhood Forum and the community for producing a plan that seeks to push the boundaries and introduce many innovations that other plans I've examined have not. I am very aware of the amount of time, determination and hard work it takes to get a neighbourhood plan to the examination stage. It's not for the faint-hearted, as I'm sure you'll agree. As previously stated, I must focus on compliance with the basic conditions. The main purpose of a neighbourhood plan is to provide a framework for the determining of planning applications. A number of policies in the plan have elements which either seek to control things which fall outside the scope of the planning system or introduce requirements which are indiscriminate in terms of the size of the development or are overly onerous and therefore would not meet the basic conditions. It will therefore be necessary for me to make a number of modifications to the plan to ensure that the basic conditions are met. However, I also will be very careful to ensure, where possible, that the intention and spirit of the plan is retained so that the plan, when modified, still reflects the community's intent in producing their neighbourhood plan. I'm going to address the Neighbourhood Plan Forum and ask, do you have any questions for me at this stage? No? Everyone happy? Okay, I'm sorry that was a bit of a lengthy introduction, but I thought it was necessary so that we understand what's what. So now we can move on to the agenda. The main reason for holding this exploratory meeting is so that I can understand and it can be explained to me, worried about the table, exactly what's happening in terms of the delivery of housing across the neighbourhood plan period. So it's focusing on what's the target, housing target, how does the neighbourhood plan seek to deliver that across the plan period, and what happens if it isn't. And that really is going to be the main focus. I'm not anticipating the other. I talked about having to make other modifications to the plan. I know what I need to do with those. I don't need to discuss them with you at this point. There may be further along some things, but those elements will be dealt with by written representation. So if I have any further questions, I will deal with those under written representation. Because this issue is so fundamental, goes to the root, if you like, of whether the plan meets the basic conditions or not, we need to sort this aspect of it out now. And that's why I've called the exploratory meeting. What I'd like to do, there is some sort of scene setting, I suppose, that I'd like to take place, and I'd like to address the District Council and ask them to set the scene in terms of local plan policy, the housing targets, and how they see that as being met across the period.
Thank you. The Torbay Local Plan was adopted in 2015. It covers the period 2012 to 2030. The local plan takes a fairly unusual approach in that it allocates larger sites itself, which is called strategic growth future growth areas, but there is a reliance on three very large neighbourhood plans to provide provide the less strategic sites to make site allocations, and that's set out in policies SS1, SS5 for employment, SS12, SS13, and policy H1 of the local plan, as well as the, for the purposes of Paignton, the strategic development policies, SDP policies. The overall local plan target is for 8,900 dwellings over the plan period, with a target for Paignton of 4,285 dwellings. We haven't asked the neighbourhood plan to allocate the entire quantum of that, but we have asked the neighbourhood forums to allocate the sites which are could be a combination of the Appendix D of the local plan site, the local plan sites.
Can you explain a bit more how that split has happened? What the split is and why that's being arrived at?
Well, it was arrived at because the decision was taken in 2011 to go down to be supportive of neighbourhood plans and to get the most out of the neighbourhood plan system that was then coming in. There were a number of strategic growth areas which are largely the ones PM covered later in the agenda, so Colleton, St Mary, Great Parks, White Rock, Western Corridor sites, which are strategic areas. But there are also a number of smaller sites allocated or identified in the Strategic Housing Land Availability Assessment, which the decision was taken to ask the forums to look at bringing those forwards. As I said, we aren't expecting the forums to allocate the full quantum of 4,285 sites. But the Appendix D sites, which we've asked the pool of sites in there, come if they were all developed, would come to just under 900 homes, which is the sort of quantum that we were asking the forums to allocate.
And that's 900 homes across the plan period?
It is, yes.
So in the local plan, the 3,000, whatever it is, 900... comes forward through sites that are identified in the plan, in the local plan?
The general approach that was thought of back in 2015, possibly slightly before, was that the first 5 years of the plan period, which is 2012 to 2017, would be sites which had planning permission at that time. The middle period of the plan period, so starting from 2017 to 2022, would be the neighbourhood forum sites, and then the longer term would be the more strategic sites, what's actually happened in practice is that there's been applications on some of the strategic sites and a lot of the growth that's happened in Paignton over the last 5 years has been on the Western Corridor, those Western Corridor sites.
And so how much is that, what scale of development has that delivered? Sorry, I've just been passed a note. I forgot one of my fundamental things. I should have reminded and let you know that the actual this session is being recorded, and the recording will be put on the council's website. Thank you.
Right, sorry, if you could bear with me, I did take the figures down. The net completions over the whole of the plan period, so for the three towns, have been somewhere in the region of 400 dwellings a year. So there is a shortfall overall.
It would be easier for me to concentrate just on Paignton, if
certainly.
That's okay.
I can clarify these figures in more detail, but Paignton completions last year were 178 dwellings. There were 289 planning permissions granted for Paignton last year. That's the year just gone, so 2017-18. In terms of the future growth areas, at Great Parks, which is Alfriston Road, there were 37 completions and permission for 80 dwellings. At White Rock, which for the avoidance of doubt is the site allocated in the local plan, not the land to the south. There were 310 permissions. 133 of those have been built out so far, of which 39 were completed last year. And at Yannon's Farm, which is also known as Yalberton, there were 211 permissions, of which 141 are built and 43 were completed last year.
So how does that affect the delivery across the plan period in terms of... So have all your longer-term strategic sites come forward?
In Paignton, pretty much, yes. The only site which isn't being built out at the moment, which has got planning permission, is Devonshire Park, which is the former Nortel. And there are contamination and site assembly issues. Well, not ownership issues, but... delivery issues with that site, although it is part of our five-year land supply. The council has assessed overall that there's a 4.19 years land supply. That is for the 2016-17. The detailed figures aren't yet available for the 17-18 figures, but they are likely to be roughly the same. So more than three, but less than 5 years land supply. I'm afraid I can't say break that down into what the exact figure is for Paignton.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So I'd like to go to the Neighbourhood Plan Forum. Is there any particular person who... Okay, David.
Yes, I'll be speaking for the forum, unless I need some help from my colleagues.
Can I just ask you whether or not that you accept that's the target, the 4,828 dwellings across the plan period?
The word target is incorrect for the Torbay plan, and that needs unpacking to explain why. It's neither a target nor is it in isolation, because there are two trajectories in the local plan that have to be met, not one. If I can unpack that further, I will do so.
Go on, explain. Yep.
Okay, thanks. We obviously haven't sent you any notes on the regulation 16 responses, But I think there are also a number of things that you need to be aware of that are relevant since August. For example, you've just heard a change in the five-year land supply figure from what you have in the Regulation 16 submission. Mm. We have been doing quite a lot of work on that, all three forums, and we fundamentally disagree with the way that's been arrived at. And that goes to the root of the disagreement that exists on how the relationship between the local plan and the neighbourhood plan is being assumed and assessed. So if I can just unpack a bit of this and pick a few things up, and then you can decide if they're relevant or not. Okay. I think the first point is that hopefully you will have seen that we've given this matter considerable attention.
Yes.
because we realised the significance of it. At the end of the day, it's the community that suffers or not, not the council. And we've set it out in part three of the plan. We've shown, and I think, you know, obviously this is an agreed fact, that the two objectives are to provide 5,000 to 500 jobs from the base of 59,000 in tandem with 8,900 homes. And it's not a target. The whole plan is not predict and provide. That was something that's actually key, and it's actually confirmed in the plan. It's a plan, monitor and manage situation. And there are various reasons for that, which obviously get close to examining a local plan rather than looking at a neighbourhood plan. We're conscious of that. But nevertheless, we have had to address those key issues because they go to the heart of the general conformity. So we've looked at the whole thing, and we've explained that there's a that the core of the plan is a reliance on significant return to net inward migration. This is not a plan that's seeking to accommodate the needs of a burgeoning resident population. It's all about the effects of net inward migration and if it's happening and how you accommodate it. And that's how the issue about plan, monitor and manage kicks in. Now, we have no problem with the plan. What we've got with is the fact that it's based upon, and this is what the local planning inspector drew attention to, the importance of the monitoring to see where you are, and obviously the five-year major review, and the first five-year major review will be in 2020, so we're not far from it, and then there's a second major review in 2025. And we draw attention at paragraph 3.9 of the plan that the fact is the local plan recognises that at the rate at which the land supply will be taken up by the market during that each five-year period is dependent upon the assumptions that are made about the net job growth and the net inward migration. It's just a fact. We're now in year seven of the local plan, and in March of this year, the three forums, conscious of the importance of needing to know where we are, we challenged the council officer's view about the land supply situation. And we've produced, but you haven't got it as a set. If you want it, we can give it to you. We've produced what we believe as three forums, the five-year land supply position is for the 2017-22 period. The importance of that period, of course, is that before that 5 years is up, there will be a major review of the plan. But we've not taken any different figures than are in the plan as they are now. And we came to the conclusion that actually using the proper interpretations by case law and everything else, there's not less than 6.1 years of supply right now. So we don't accept that it's 4.19 years. And it has crept up, of course, from the 3.9 at the Regulation 16 stage. And we think it will, in fact, creep up further once it's looked at properly.
Can I just, I'm not in great detail, but can you just very briefly tell me what your method of arriving at the 6.1?
Exactly, as set out in the PBG and the cases that have been through in the courts about what is and is not usable for 5 years. And in particular, the fact that the courts have ruled that it's not the certainty of deliverability, it's the availability. And they're key here, because what we're seeing is, and I'll come on to that, the market actually is now realising that it can't pump out anymore because it's not being rolled out and purchased. And that's driven by the fact, it's clear to us in the community, it's driven by the fact that the job position has just dried up. In fact, it's dropped below the 2012 base. So you can't carry on only looking at one trajectory to the complete exclusion of the other one, because the two have a direct effect in terms of the regard that you have to the NPPF and the regard you must have also to what the strategy actually is of the local plan.
Can I just interrupt you? Because I think it would be a good idea to have Torbay Council's view on how the five-year land supply, in their opinion, should be. I think that's quite important now, so that I can compare the two when I'm considering things. So, David, are you going to?
Thank you. Myself and David have discussed this over a number of years in quite some detail. And I accept that their views are honestly held. I think that there are three main areas of difference between the council and the Neighbourhood Forum about the calculation of five-year land supply. The first one is that I don't think I'm doing them an injustice when I say that they favour a lower pace of growth than is in the local plan for the reasons that David has said, because jobs haven't come forward. I can return to that later if you like. The second thing is counting the assumptions we've made about windfalls. Initially, we counted 130 windfalls a year, but the number of windfalls coming forward over the last 5 years has been 100 dwellings a year, so we've based it on 100 dwellings a year. The third area of difference, which is where there's an element of planning judgment, is where sites are deliverable within the definition of the NPPF. And we believe that we've taken the NPPF definition that if a site has planning permission, then it should be treated as deliverable unless there's clear evidence to the contrary. And we have counted things like build-out rates in our assessments of the delivery of those sites. And the second part of the NPPF is that if a site doesn't have planning permission, we can only count it as being deliverable if there's clear evidence of there being a realistic prospect of the site being built out. So, for example, we did, as part of the consultation with the Neighbourhood Forum, we did include Paignton Police Station as a deliverable site because there was clearly a house builder champing at the bit waiting to build it out. But we did look at the five-year supply in a lot of detail, and in my view, the 4.19-year supply is a robust figure. I think you could make different assumptions. You could get it slightly higher, slightly lower, but it seems to me, in my professional opinion, that our supply is somewhere more than three and less than 5 years.
I think the best way that we must deal with this, to give you a fair chance of understanding how far apart we are, is that both sides should give you a copy of our different documents. They both exist. Clearly, they've emerged since the submission in August, and if you consider them to be relevant, then it's important that you take both into account. But I'm not sure how far you want to get involved in the Labour plan in a five-year supply. But I do draw to your attention, and I'm just looking for it now, and forgive me, David, if I've misread it. I think somewhere you take the view that the Submodwin development has merely lowered the bar, and that's not where you're going. Well, if that's the case, I'm afraid it's not for a local planning authority to decide what the judgment should have been. It's clear, the Submodwin decision, how you should approach it, and that's how the three forums have approached it in their submission. So I invite you to ask for both the council and the forum to provide you with the five-year supply. That would be the proper way, I think, of dealing with it.
Okay. Can I just go back to you, David, and ask you about What impact do you think the potential changes in terms of assessment of delivery will be on the five-year land supply? What potentially?
In the draft MPPF?
Yeah.
My first reading of it was that the definition of delivery in the draft MPPF was a tougher one than the existing MPPF footnote 11. On thinking about it, I'm not so sure that it is that different. I think that the footnote 11 basically takes the approach that if a site has planning permission, it's deliverable unless there's clear evidence it's not. And if it doesn't have planning permission, it's not deliverable unless there's clear evidence that it is. And I think that's broadly what the draft says.
So, David, going back to the sort of one of the initial points is, does the neighbourhood plan forum accept the 4,828 dwellings as being?
It is not the figure against which you should be measuring this neighbourhood plan. And the reason for that is because we are in year 7 of the plan. And what we have done in very careful terms, because we had the same question, well, what do you do with the period that's already gone and what's happened? And we've set out in detail the calculations from the assessment made by the local plan inspector at the 1st of April 2015, and we've updated that using exactly the figures in the local plan. And therefore, if you were to say, well, you provide 4,200 a day, that'd be a nonsense, because you're always providing an 18-year figure every year. And that's nonsense. So we've set out in great detail, and I have to say that credit to the council, they've not been able to challenge that figure, and they haven't done the way we've set it out.
So what is your figure for delivery of housing across the plan period?
The figure that is in the plan is that, leaving aside windfalls, it's 3,000... You turn to Table 8 as the quick way, Table 8.1 as a quick way of doing this. Because we've taken that figure, that is the proper local plan figure, and for the period that's left of the plan, we calculate that the local plan review requires us, the local plan requires us to consider identification of 2,925. You'll see that in Table 8.1. We've actually shown at the time the plan was produced that there are 3,080 sites already with planning consent or that have been treated in the local plan as committed. So we've gone in some detail because we realised that, you know, this is quite a finding. So we explained it in great detail in the plan and supporting documents. So in simple terms, we found that there was no need to allocate further sites. And leaving aside the obvious point that there's no requirement legally for a neighbourhood plan to do so, and even the local plan says...
Can we come on to that?
Yes.
I'm going to come on to that point in a
so
minute.
We have set out in extreme detail.
So in your... as far as the neighbourhood plan forum concerned, what will be you anticipate the delivery across the plan period, taking into account that period which has already gone?
Assuming, assuming there's no change by the council in the reviews, of which there are two to come, then it would be a delivery of 3,080 plus the windfalls. We don't agree with what you just heard about windfalls, but let's just stick with sites for the moment. Therefore, demonstrably, we exceed the current local plan requirement for the full local plan period.
Can I come to David, are you going to respond to this? I'm just conscious I'm focusing on you.
David one and David two.
Can we just explore a bit about the windfall situation in terms of what allowance you've made for windfalls?
Certainly. I mean, Torbay is a substantially urban area, and we count, for the purposes of this discussion, we count windfalls of dwelling of applications for five dwellings or fewer. According to the 2008 and 2013 SCHLAs, we were entitled to count 130 dwellings as coming from windfalls per year. And that's the figure that is in the local plan. The monitoring has shown that since 2012, which is when the local plan period started, and also when the definition of in the MPPF came into force, the net number of completions was 100 dwellings a year. So we have used that lower figure, which I understand is controversial, but the MPPF does say you have to have evidence of deliverability in order to be able to count windfalls. Even if you counted 130 dwellings a year as part of the housing trajectory, there still would be a shortfall against 5 years' supply.
Is there any comment that you want to make on the 3,080 figure?
Sorry, I was going to come on to that. The figures in Table 8.1, I don't have a problem with the figures themselves. The numbers, the two concerns I've got about the figures is that a lot of the, for want of a better word, the urban sites are identified. They're not proposed in the local plan, in the neighbourhood plan, and we have asked the forums to make them clear proposals.
So they're not allocated.
I don't think they are. No, they're identified, but they're not site allocations.
This is the fundamental issue that we disagree with completely. The word identify is in actually the local plan policy. You won't find the word allocate anywhere. We have identified well beyond the years 6 to 10, bearing in mind we're year 7 now, well beyond the requirement of the local plan. And this issue about what is an identified and allocated site is key.
What could you explain to me the process that you went through in order to identify the sites?
Sure.
So have they gone through a structured process looking at, you know, access, yield, all
these? We didn't need to do that because I draw attention again to the fact that all the sites in this schedule have either been identified on the local plan map as committed, okay, or they have been identified as for consideration by the neighbourhood plan, I use the word consideration, or they've actually got planning consent. So when we came to do our bit, we found that in actual fact there were no judgments to be made on individual sites because they'd all been made.
Okay, do you mind if I go and ask David for a response to that? Or anyone else who wants to respond?
Thank you. This is, I think, the nub of contention between the council and the neighbourhood forums. The local plan does seek to ask the forums to allocate sites. I think, in fairness, I think it would have been better if the local plans actually used the word they should become forward as site-specific proposals identified on a policies map, but we are where we are, and it doesn't. But it does clearly say, as I say, in policy SS1, SS5, SS12, SS13, and the SDP policies, that the local plan looks to the neighbourhood forums to allocate sites. It also mentions, as David says, the policies map clearly identifies potential development sites for consideration in neighbourhood development plans, primarily for housing. But as I say, this is the...
Sorry, just to add, beg your pardon, that under the designations for information only on the key,
in the
policies map.
In the local plan.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that I can understand properly, so in identifying those for information purposes only, no kind of process was undertaken to that could be aligned to an allocations
process.
There also,
so somebody just said that's a vacant site or that's a previously developed site or something. They didn't actually go through a process.
They did go through a process. Okay. They were identified in the 2013 SHLA. There was an officer level civing, both to consider those sites and also other sites that we considered at the local plan examination. So they're sites that the council believes are broadly developable, but the decision was made back in 2012 to ask the neighbourhood forums to make site-specific allocations of them. So in the council's view, yes, they're likely to be developable, but without them being site-specific proposals, it's harder to say they're deliverable. Because we're not in a confrontational meeting, I'll say that making them site-specific proposals, I think, would increase their deliverability, but it's not a silver bullet. It wouldn't automatically mean that they could be counted as 5-year supply.
Right. But it would help. I am struggling to understand why. I mean, on the one hand, I do understand, but on the other hand, I don't. If the sites were identified and a certain level of process was gone through in order to be able to identify those sites, I'm not quite sure why the process didn't carry on, why you didn't identify them in the local plan, and why was it because you wanted the neighbourhood plan forum to have autonomy in the decision making of whether those sites should be allocated or not?
My understanding of it is that it was exactly that. It was to provide as much autonomy as possible within the strategic framework to the neighbourhood forums to identify...
To take ownership of them.
To take ownership of the smaller sites, yes.
Okay.
I think you've... Sorry.
Sorry, I don't know. Roger?
Yeah. I'd just like to pass a comment on the under-6 windfalls. I've got a list here for the last year of 151, which according to the council is a year and a half supply. I've got figures dating right from 2012, which unfortunately 2012 to 17 I can't access here because there's no internet access.
Right, because I've got it all.
But I will absolutely guarantee that it is far in excess of the 100 per year that the council are saying. And I've got them all, and you're quite welcome to all the plan numbers, the description, and the allocation.
If I decide at the end of the proceedings that something like that would be helpful, then
actually,
I'll certainly
you have them, because we've actually put
I've got
in
a big long list of
yeah. You will find in the supporting evidence document.
Yeah.
You will find every single
site
that has been granted consent of 5 or less that qualify, and it was Rogers Hardware that did it. And I know David has got great admiration for it.
And have they been delivered?
That is not the test. The test is the consent available?
I'm asking you, have they been delivered?
I don't know, because we don't keep the record of that. What we were being told was that the figures being granted consent was less than 130, and what we proved was that they were greater than 130. But can I come back to the point we were on, of autonomy?
Yes.
It's a very important point, because what has probably struck yourself and the other examiner, because clearly the three forums are working together in a very unique situation. As each forum has developed, the geography and the makeup of each area has influenced the content of the plan.
Actually.
And in the case of the other two forum areas, they chose different sites, which obviously meant that they would have to replicate the work that had been done at the local plan level,
yes,
to that extent. So what you've got is very simply a situation where I think it's fair to say in Brixham, there were some sites that they wanted to switch, Ours was, we were surprised to find that we'd already got quite a lot. And Torquay has in a similar but not quite the same switch way. So the autonomy of each neighbourhood forum has been happening, but in this particular plan, we haven't taken that view. That's not the position that the community is wanting to pursue. We've seen that the consents are granted, the sites are allocated. We have seen total inconsistency of the council on this issue. And to bring you up to date, the council has just had land release fund monies released by the government on the basis that the sites identified for neighbour plan consideration basically have been allocated. And there are two specific sites in Paignton. So we are surprised that this view is still being pursued by the council, that the local plan hasn't allocated them.
This obviously does go to the heart of the heart of the problem. What, okay, David, Tracy, what's the missing link between them? Is it just the form of words that's used in the neighbourhood plan that means that that Torbay can't be satisfied that it's that they are allocated, or what's missing from the process?
On this specific issue, as you'll be aware from our other representations, we did have other issues with the plan.
Yes.
But on this issue, it is missing the word that they're allocations. If the remedy would be to make them site-specific proposals in the neighbourhood plan, we've said that there would be some additional SA work that would be needed to do that, which we've offered to help with. And also, in the light of the recent over wind decision, there would be a need for some of those sites to be appropriately assessed, which we view would be a reformatting of the work that's already been done and is included in the background papers to the neighbourhood plan. But our view would be that the solution to this objection would be to make the sites proposals.
Okay, and what's the objection from the neighbourhood plan forum for doing that?
That is precisely what the situation is that we shouldn't be doing. It would be duplicating what has already been done.
But is that your only, is that the neighbourhood forum's only objection to it? The feeling that it would be duplicating.
I come back to the simple point. In law, there is no requirement to have an allocation at all. That's not the line we have taken, but it is nevertheless relevant that if we're to be judged on basic conditions tests using an unlawful step, we would be very seriously worried about that. It comes down to this issue about how far the local plan did or did not assess the sites that it's identified, and not only identified, but is pursuing implementation of as allocations.
Yes. If we put to one side the issue of whether or not there would be a need for further assessment, is there fundamentally still an objection on the part of the Neighbourhood Forum to seeing those as allocations?
Yes, because that step is unnecessary, a duplication, and holds up the plan for developers to implement.
Do you have any comment to make on that?
So I think that you've heard both sides of the picture. So it's something for you to take a view about whether or not you can, or the council
is... I've got some more questions.
Sure. but what I would say is that if site allocations aren't made, it's going to be increasingly difficult for the council to maintain a five-year land supply. It's perhaps less of a problem for Torquay and Brixham, which do make site allocations and therefore can take some comfort from the written ministerial statement that neighbourhood plans have weight if they've got 3 years supply. But Paignton neighbourhood plan, in our view, doesn't allocate sites, so can't take comfort from that written ministerial statement.
Can we go back to policy SS1, where
in identified sites and throughout it. We've got that the in the policy that obviously that we like neighbourhood development plans to identify sites, but if they don't, that Torbay Council will. Because obviously the neighbourhood plan forum are quite correct. Neighbourhood plans do not have to allocate sites. They do, however, have to demonstrate they can deliver the target figure for across the plan period. So I think, personally, that there are consequences both ways for not allocating sites or not having an allocation site allocations document in place.
Yes.
So could you just explain a bit about what the process is you, Torbay Council, will go through on the basis that there are no sites allocated in the Paignton plan?
We haven't prepared site allocations, DPD, and that's been a matter of resources. Like all planning departments, there's been significant cuts in the planning department. So that's the reason why a site allocations DPD hasn't been prepared. In my view, a site allocations DPD would probably be of limited value, certainly at this late stage, because I think there would inevitably be the mission creep in that the whole issue of Torbay's growth rate, I don't believe, has been finally accepted by the forum, and that there would be the debate about the appropriate growth level going forward would inevitably come up again. And there's a legal requirement for the local authority to have completed a local plan first review by 2020. So in my view, it would be a better use of time to actually move on with the local plan first review when we can fairly have that debate about growth levels.
But ignoring the resources issue,
yes.
You know, there is obviously, I mean, it's unusual, I think, to have a policy that says, you know, the site allocations will be passed over to the neighbourhood plans when, you know, there's no requirement for anyone to bring forward a neighbourhood plan. So there was always the risk, wasn't there, that that wouldn't happen, either that the neighbourhood plans wouldn't come forward or that the allocation, you know, the neighbourhood plans themselves wouldn't take on those allocations. So there is an issue there in terms of delivery on that policy, isn't there?
So might I just mention the policy SS13 that talks about that 5-year delivery supply and how else that might be delivered?
That's on page?
On page 92 and 93. So that policy sets out a way of monitoring the 5-year period and then sets out a process of options that might be available to deliver housing should our 5-year supply be at risk, which includes bringing our future growth areas forward.
No, go on.
You've got two things here being mixed up. You're talking about delivery for the whole plan period, which is not what the local plan says, and we're in the general conformity with the local plan area of discussion here. And what the actual plan says, and credit to Mr. Pickhaver, he actually said it, we're required to identify sites to meet years 6 to 10. Well, on that basis, we've only got 3 more years to identify. Well, we've gone way beyond that. We've identified that there are sufficient sites for the entire plan period. Now, David Pickhaver is quite right that clearly, if the local planning authority did not address the other trajectory and its effect, we would be extremely concerned, because it means that Torbay would become a dormitory town, which is not inconsistency with the NPPF or the local plan. So this issue about the two trajectories is key round here. Now, on the five-year supply, I'm assuming that we don't need to have much further discussion on that because you'll just look at the two documents. But coming on to your key point, this troubled the local plan inspector because clearly it's not possible to require a neighbourhood plan to have it. I'm not saying that's because we didn't want to. It's because this is the issue that's come up. And that's why, at the examination public, the local plan inspector required, I think is the right word, a commitment is the right word, from the council, that if for any reason, and we're not the only plan, but if for any reason there was not a sufficient supply, then it was the obligation on the council who committed to doing a DPD sites DPD. Now, to have met that obligation, it should have been started in 2016 when any concern might have existed. And we know there was concern. The reality is the council is now seeing and debated on the 23rd of April this month a considerable slowdown in over 100 sites across Torbay because effectively there's now an oversupply. And that is something that we are not relying upon at all because the local plan, quite rightly, has actually foreseen that possibility. And it does actually say in the plan that the sites may well last longer than the period to 2030. And obviously that would be picked up in any reviews, or ought to be. So I've got some sympathy with the fact that the solution probably now is to have a review of the local plan, probably earlier than 2020, rather than wandering off into a DPD that's in isolation.
Okay, there seem to me to be a number of issues, and perhaps David would like to set out what the consequences are of no site allocations within the if we assume that I find that acceptable, which is a big assumption, so we won't. But if we were to assume that it was, and there's no DPD site allocations document prepared, what are the consequences or the potential consequences of that in the absence of, if there is an absence of a five-year land supply?
Well, the consequences of not having a five-year land supply is that for a large number of sites within Torbay, the presumption in favour of sustainable development would need to be applied when determining planning applications. There are...
So I'd be right in saying that you wouldn't be able to direct development to necessarily the sites that have been identified. Other sites could come forward.
I disagree, but...
No, OK, well, just...
I think it would be difficult in my view, I don't think an inspector would support that approach. I think an inspector would look at five-year supply in a fairly blunt way and would determine the application that was before them on the basis of the presumption in favour of sustainable development, assuming there weren't other reasons why the presumption didn't apply to that site.
Yes.
That last point is one where I think we do meet of minds, because the geographical fact is that the fringe of Paignton is, its juxtaposition is with the habitat regulation matters of European significance and protected species. And in fact, that is the caveat in the local plan as a whole, which is why the 8,900 is not a target. It is an assumption to start from. And we can go into much greater detail on that if you so wish, but it is not a target. So far as Paignton is concerned, the presumption in favour of sustainable development of the NPPF, almost in every site, is ruled out by the requirement in NPPF that it does not apply where there are sites involved with appropriate assessment. And that is exactly what we have in the majority of the fringe of Paignton.
but it won't be in every case.
In actual fact, it probably is, because we've got the whole of the boundary of Paignton right the way up to Colleton St Mary within the sustenance zone of the South Hams SAC, and there's only a small part that isn't, and then you bump into the protected species of Sale Buntings. So I would say that if you were to assume that the lack of a 5-year supply would immediately mean you can't control what's happening, that would be totally wrong. The MPPF already does that because it can't ignore the requirement of the Habitat Directive.
Sorry, just a point of law.
Yeah, the Sale Bunting is not under the Habitat Directive.
But it's a red list species.
It is, but not under the Habitat Directive. Okay.
And it's the government policy to restore the decline that's happening in the protected species.
You wanted to say something, didn't you? Or was it gone past now?
Yeah, I just think that there's something being missed that's very basic. And that is the local plan figure for the 8,000 some odd houses was based on the fact that there would be a 5,000 to 5,500 increase in jobs. In actual fact, there's been a loss of between 1,000 and 2,000. I'm not exactly sure of the exact figure, but there's been a loss of jobs in Torbay of between 1,000 and 2,000 on the basic figure. Therefore, if you're building houses on the basis of bringing in jobs and it's failing, you don't need the houses.
I'd just like to explore it a little bit more in terms of the housing figure that was arrived at and what basis that was arrived at and how that meets the requirements of the MPPF.
The figure that's in the local plan, as David has rightly said, is constrained below the objectively assessed need. The objectively assessed need is based on a 2013 study by Peter Brett Associates, which argued, which looked at both demographic change, whether or not there was a need to boost housing for affordable housing, and also the job take-up, job creation, and came up with a figure of 12,300 dwellings. The inspector, as I said, constrained that below the market, below objectively assessed need. I have to accept that what Roger says is right, that the recent no-miss figures do show that there's been a net loss of 2,000 jobs in Torbay since 2012, whereas the growth rate in Exeter, Exeter is the main driver of the sub-regional economy in terms of job take-up. I would say that that is only one figure. There are other statistics that the number of people in Torbay who have jobs is at a record high. It's over 60,000 at the moment. And also that the recent demographic figures are that there's 8,200 new households projected between 2012 and 2020. So these things must be taken in the round. But in my view, it would be wholly exceptional if the council's objectively assessed need could be said to be less than the household projection, which, as I said, that's 8,200. By the time you've added an allowance for to convert households to numbers of homes you need, it still looks like that the local plan target of 8,900 is a fair target.
Forgive me, I have a number of comments there. Can I just take a simplistic one at the moment, just on the jobs front? as I say, it is a specific trajectory alongside the housing one. It's not separate to, and remember what the Supreme Court said about the tilted approach. What's being used is unemployment figures, which is not the target of the, use the word target, but this bit one is a target. It's not the policy of the local plan. The policy of the local plan is to achieve net growth in jobs of at least 275 a year. Now, we should therefore be at 60,000 plus at the moment. In fact, we're at 57,000. Now, this is the number of jobs in the Bay, not the people who are employed or unemployed, because you can be living in the Bay and employed, but you actually work outside the Bay. And this is the fundamental strategic issue that's now coming up, that we are becoming a dormitory town, which is not what the local plan is, nor does it comply with the NPPF. So the review...
In what way doesn't it comply with the NPPF?
Because the NPPF is seeking sustainable development and to a large degree the not needing to travel elsewhere for shopping.
It also seeks to significantly boost the supply of housing.
But that is not to the exclusion of the other policies, as the Supreme Court ruled. And in this particular case, the NPPF 37 specifically refers to the fact that reducing journey lengths is a key objective in terms of achieving sustainable development. You would be, as a dormitory town, committing Torbay to having to live here and work somewhere else. That is not the strategy. Now, if we have a local plan inquiry where that is the strategy that emerges from it, so be it. But that's not what this neighbourhood plan has to be in general conformity with. It has to be in general conformity with the plan that we have, and that is seeking to maintain the self-containment at something like 78-79% of Torbay. That is the plan you are required to look at in the basic conditions test. If you seek to look at another plan that doesn't exist, I would be considerably concerned about that. But the fact is, we're at 57,000 jobs now. That was published on the 29th of January this year. And it's the number of jobs in the town. And that obviously is a biennial figure. Which means that we are now at a level of jobs that was the same as 2002. And yet, we have seen 5,000 jobs built within the inter-census period, another nearly 1,800 jobs built since 2011. So we're seeing a way skewing of the provision of housing and the provision of jobs, which is not the plan that we can be measured against. Coming now to the question of consequences and so forth, you will find in the 5-year supply, we've got a table that actually is being missed. In fact, to be fair, I'm not sure it is in the 5-year supply. If you take the three neighbourhood plans together and the sites that they identify, albeit in different ways, then they come to just over 8,500 plus the 1,700 that have been built. That means that the three neighbourhood plans already meet and exceed the figure of 8,900 to the end of the plan period already. So this insatiable appetite to significantly boost the housing supply, at what point does it actually bang into the principles of sustainable development in a place like Torbay? And you realise actually that when the market is slowing down, it's not because of the shortage of land that's around, it's because you can't actually get any work here.
Does the council have anything to say?
I think really this is something that will have to be addressed at the local plan first review. I've accepted that the NOMIS figures do show a loss of jobs. The NOMIS figures go up and down go up and down. So you can't necessarily take one year as gospel. But we've accepted that there's been a loss of jobs. Against that, as I've said, the demographic projections, which I accept are based on inwards migration, have also gone up. The strategy of whether or not Torbay should should ask neighbours to take some of our demographic need is something that, again, will need to be addressed with our neighbours as part of the duty to cooperate. The current policy isn't to do that. The current policy is to consume our own smoke. As I've said, I think that it would be wholly exceptional if the local plan could come up with a housing figure that was less than the demographic projection in terms of our local housing need or objectively assessed need. And you know, we're also aware that there's a significant push by the government to boost housing supply, and that is in both the draft MPPF and the housing white paper, and that is a pressure that's been applied to local authorities.
And would you agree that that is supposed to take into account an element of inward migration in terms of assessing that?
Well, the household projections are the starting point for working out local housing need or objectively assessed need, and they do take into account migration, yes.
Excuse me. I think the other dimension that worries me is the number of houses that have been on the market for quite some time, ready-built houses, and added to which I also am concerned about the number of new houses that have been recently built but still remain unoccupied. So to say there's a demand, I worry about that. There's an availability of houses.
And can I draw to your attention again that it was only on the 23rd of this month, sorry, April, that the councils, I'll call them a housing committee, and I've got the press articles as well, have become concerned that there's over 100 sites that have slowed down. This is not because the land isn't there, it's not because consents don't exist. It's very, very basic. Can I come to this? Belief that the new method of doing things is going to change the position. When the government published the draft of what the proposed formula would do for each area in September of last year, Torbay's was quite interesting. As you will know, it sought to take the what one would call the normal objectively assessed need without policy on and add in a fairly hefty addition to deal with employment and differences of housing prices and so forth, quite deliberately. And it went round every authority in the country in its list to work out how much more development that would mean. In the case of Torbay, it's quite interesting because based on the current local plan, it would have produced a figure of 1,049 per annum, but in actual fact, based upon the new formula, it would be 588. And that's the point, that the present local plan has already got one hell of an uplift in it, and in fact would even exceed the uplift that the government were proposing. But again, the simple point is, you can have any figure you like, you've still got to demonstrate you can fit it in. And that's where the issue in this neck of the woods bumps into the habitat regulation assessment problem, which quite rightly the local plan addressed to the degree that was necessary.
Can I just clarify that? There are a number of the sites that haven't been allocated but have been identified are not subject to that.
No. I repeat my key point, and we state it in the plan. All these sites have either been identified as committed sites, or they've been identified as, I'll add in the gloss, for the neighbour plans to consider, but were marked on the plans for the assessment of what effect they would have. And then you've got those that have got planning consent, where the authority is required, of course, to have ensured that each one meets those requirements.
So I'm still, forgive me, but I'm still struggling to understand in those circumstances why the neighbourhood plan forum didn't want to allocate them, because they've been identified in that way, the chances are they will come forward they will potentially come forward for development.
We're impressed to not duplicate, and it's not proportionate and it's not legally required. The sites are already identified. the local plan.
So you have no problem with them coming forward for development?
We based our entire review on whether or not they would come forward at a reasonable rate. Because if you actually compare this schedule, it's actually a more realistic schedule than the one in the local plan. We didn't just switch off and say, oh, well, nothing to do with that, so walk away, it's all done. We didn't do that because we said, well, okay, is it the case that those sites are likely to come forward at each of those five-year tranches and so on? And that's what we do. And we didn't stop at the first review. We didn't even stop at the second review. We went right the way through to 2030. And we've looked at each site again, and it's in the supporting evidence documents, considerable number of tables, where we've where we've compared what the SLA said, what the local plan said, what the latest up-to-date position is, and then came to a conclusion at the end of it. And what we think we've got here is a far more realistic phasing of those sites. We've not sought to change them, swap them, add to them, whatever. We've not seen that to be what the community wishes to do. We've sought to have a look to see whether or not they're realistic. And I come back to my central point. There's no impediment because the council has just literally had £3.9 million based upon that they're already allocated.
Can we... as far as... And I don't want to put words into your mouth. As far as the council is concerned, the main thrust of the objection is not because the sites are not likely to be developed and deliver the numbers that you are expecting them to deliver, but it's because they can't be counted towards your five-year land supply. Is that, or have I misunderstood?
I think that that's correct, what you've said.
So in a nutshell, that's it.
I think without them being made site-specific proposals, the impetus to develop them will be less, but the consequence of them not being allocated will be... contributes to the lack of five-year supply.
Yeah, okay. So, once again, without putting words into your mouth, would the council's position be that it was in everyone's interest that they were allocated?
Yes.
So, your position is the Labour plan... Go on.
Can I just put a layman's point of view?
Of course.
When you give a developer permission to build 200 houses on a site, that developer will build, say, 25 houses. And then you'll see what sells. And as they're selling, they then build more.
Mm-hmm.
At the local plan examination, the Builders Federation admitted, rather shamefully, that they would only look for per site a 25 house per year allocation. And this was because of market problems, not only market problems, but the fact that the price of a new house is far and way beyond the means of anybody living in Torbay and working in Torbay can afford. So these houses are only being built for incomers. And if the market's not there, they're not building. Therefore, what's the point of allocating a builder another 200 house site when the sites already aren't being completed? The slowdown is even more so than the Builders Federation agreed. With the jobs not being there, the only way that you're going to sell those houses is to incomers. And there's only going to be a certain number of incomers, like retirees. I wouldn't imagine, I can't prove it, I haven't got the figures, but I wouldn't imagine that the influx into Torbay from people coming up country, coming down to retire, is that great, because if it were, then the house building rate would be greater. If you take David was talking about the housing objective needs. There's 2,000 properties in Torbay which have been empty for more than 6 months. We've got new houses being built which are lying empty because they can't be sold. I'm pretty certain that if you looked at the number of people on the list for needing homes in Torbay, I bet that hasn't gone down because the affordable housing is not affordable. And to continue to build more and more houses which are going to stand empty or wait for somebody from abroad or up country to come and buy them, I can't see there's an objective need. The objective need is not being catered for in the council's applications and planning applications that are being granted. It's not there.
I think at this point I must draw to your attention the answer that the local plan inspector gave to this point, which is at paragraph 41 of his report, which says, detailed monitoring and review are important considerations in the development plan process, and the council is committed to regular reviews of the plan. There will be ample opportunity to increase housing numbers if justified by jobs growth. Alternatively, it may be necessary to reduce housing numbers over the plan period if the council's jobs growth strategy is less successful than is hoped. At present, it is regarded as sensible and pragmatic to plan for 8,900 additional dwellings over the plan period. And he goes on elsewhere to say that it's unrealistic, and I use that word in there, to identify the longer term sites. Now, we've ignored all of that. We have looked to see if the number that's in the plan that's subscribed to us is achievable with the sites and the consents that have been granted. And we've concluded that for every criteria that the local plan was seeking to implement, for example, the build-out rate maximum, the site that the market wanted and so forth, that it was going to be achieved. What we have put our hand up to is that if there is a conflict with the policies, the general conformity, it's that we think some sites are going to take longer to come forward than others. And we've tried, in an honest way, to set that out in a traffic light system. We could be wrong, but that's what we've done. We haven't ignored it. But to require that we go and allocate them all over again is just utterly unjustified.
Okay. I must admit, I was hoping that there would be some meeting of minds on this and that there might be some understanding of a pragmatic and practical way forward to resolve the issue of the objection placed by Torbay Council. I mean, we have focused on the local plan, but that's not the only thing I have to look at. And it's about general conformity, and there's lots of case law, which I'm sure you're aware of, which relates to what general conformity means. It's always a much happier situation if there isn't a disagreement between the local planning authority and the neighbourhood plan group, neighbourhood plan forum in this case. It would be much better to be able to move forward together on it. But at the end of the day, it's my decision, isn't it, as to what we're going to do, what I'm going to do. I don't think there's any need to go through these individual policies in great detail. I know that, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, regardless of what the outcome of this, my focus on this particular issue is, there are a number of changes that will have to be made in order to meet the basic conditions in terms of the wording of the policies and, in fact, some of the formatting of the way the plan is laid out.
and I need to decide whether taking both the responses that I've had to my questions today, taking them all into consideration, whether I consider that the plan as currently worded does meet or does not meet the basic conditions. And I'm going to have to go away and think about that because it's not straightforward. I think we could have come to a fairly straightforward resolution of it today, but that's not the case. So I'm going to take some time to think about it, and then I will come back through the programme officer with my thinking behind it as to whether or not I think it is a fundamental enough problem to necessitate a suspension of the plan, or even for me to say that the plan cannot proceed. I can say some.
I think you are treading into areas of extreme difficulty. We know that.
I knew that the moment I picked it up.
Yeah. But on a slightly important note, you rightly said that we're all working to these new guidance. And it's 9 months now since the forum put in the plans. And it does talk in there about, and you've kindly said there's no need to submit further comments on the representations that were made by the council. But there are some things that have been raised that are new. And I was going to ask you, if we don't go through these other things, what we do about that, because there are comments that we may have, and are you going to ask us for any further comments?
If they are fairly brief, then it obviously makes sense to go through them now, and if you're happy to respond to them, then I think that makes sense and that's a good use of our time. But it may be, what I was saying is it may be, as I look further into other policies within the plan, that there may be things I need you to clarify. Particularly, it comes to mind, I probably will need some more information on the local green spaces, that sort of thing. But I'm quite happy for you to...
Yeah, I would find it helpful because you've mentioned formatting and the way laid out. Now, there is an issue here that is arguably not a basic condition matter. Clarity, yes. But the way it's laid out, no.
Well, that depends whether I consider that that is contributes or does not contribute to the clarity.
That's where I accept you'd have to demonstrate it, but...
I actually don't have to demonstrate it. That's my judgment.
I don't want to take issue with you, but you do, because you're making a decision that is actionable.
I know, but it's the decision on how my report is my decision. So I make the decision as to whether or not
yes.
something has, in my opinion, is something. And I have to say to you that I would only be doing it in the interests of ensuring that the neighbourhood plan is...
Excellent.
As I said in my opening comments, so I'm not looking to make life more difficult for you. I'm looking to make life more better for everybody who has to use the document.
That's
that would be
exactly
where
what
the clarity
I hoped you would
is.
Say, because if we could just touch upon PNP1, which you've listed as the first policy, and I wasn't entirely sure, and I'm still not, whether that is one that you feel falls into your formatting and this way it's laid out.
I haven't, it does, but I haven't meant, that's not the reason it was listed there, it's because it relates to housing.
In that case, I need to make a brief comment. We quite deliberately laid out PNP1 so that you can see by geography and subject how it links together. Okay. The notion of having them as separate policies moves away from that, and the coherence goes. So if there's concern about that, then we need to discuss it, because that is how PNP1 was put together, deliberately to be an area-wide policy, deliberately to take up key issues that the community through the four objectives wanted to see achieved. and that's important.
Okay, I did say in my opening statement that I don't generally, the process is not one for discussion on those changes. My report, without, there will be recommendations that are about meeting the basic conditions, and those are, it would be for the council to decide, but that's a sort of black and white, it does or doesn't meet the basic conditions. It is up to you and the council to decide whether you want to make the changes based on clarity.
That's helpful, thank you.
Are there anything else you wanted to raise?
Yes, since you've been left in this difficult position of allocation versus identification, when we get to PNP 13, housing opportunities within the town centre, those sites listed in that policy are completely in accordance with the local plan. But one of those sites is one of the sites I've been saying. It's identified by us, but being used by the council as indicated, for which they've now got money to implement it. So I have extreme difficulty in seeing how the neighbourhood plan requires some further step before implementation is achievable.
I think whether or not, from my perspective, whether or not the council's achieved funding for the site is not relevant in terms of my consideration.
Well, it is on the basis that they believe it's allocated. And it's a PNP site.
I think that's for me to make the decision on.
As long as you've got the information.
Okay. Are there any more comments anyone wants to make?
Just a clarification on the duplication of the work on the site identified site.
Yes.
The local plan has a set broad site, SEA of broad areas. The individual SEA of the size, it hasn't been done in the local plan, so we were expecting it to be done in the
as part of the
plan.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, can that be repeated? Because it's not correct.
No, it is. It is the broad areas. That is the strategic delivery areas. We haven't assessed individual sites.
Well, the local plan hasn't.
No.
No. Well, as you know, we did a voluntary sustainability appraisal because it's set up. So that, whatever fault that is of the local plan, it's not one that is relevant to the neighbourhood plan, because we've done a voluntary sustainability appraisal, which includes an SEA and an HRA screening.
Because that hasn't been done for those specific sites in the local plan.
Mm-hmm. Right, last opportunity. Does anyone else have anything they want to say?
I think we're willing to rely on what we've said in our Regulation 16 representations. Thank you.
Okay. On that basis, I'll close the meeting. Thank you very much, everyone, for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.